Create forms beside your physical body. However, their duration and degree are dependent upon the intensity of any given emotional origin. Your space is therefore filled with incipient forms, quite vivid, but beneath the regular structure of matter that you perceive.
Jane, as Seth, reached across the coffee table between us to take my half-full glass of beer. I note this because of the following comment by Seth.
Rupert thanks you. You need not note this down. We slow down now and then to choose the particular word, for some of this material is rather difficult.
Very interesting. I had noticed the nearly regular variations in the speed of Jane's delivery not long after the session began. Each segment of this fast, then slow tempo seemed to cover a few paragraphs at the most. The effect was much more apparent tonight than usual.
These projections, then, actually are sent out constantly. Some more sophisticated scientific instruments than you now have would clearly show not only the existence of these forms, but also vibrations in varying waves of intensity surrounding those physical objects that you do perceive. To make this clearer, look at any table in the room before you. It is physical, solid, and you perceive it easily. Now, for an analogy, imagine, if you can, that behind the table is another just like it, but not quite as physical, and behind that one, another, and another behind that, each one more difficult to perceive, fading into invisibility. And in front of the table is a table just like it, only a bit less physical appearing than the real table, it also having a succession of even less physical tables extending outward, and the same for each side of the table. Now, anything that appears in physical terms also exists in other terms that you do not perceive. You only perceive realities when they achieve a certain pitch, when they seem to coalesce into matter, but they actually exist, and quite validly, at other levels. Now you may take your break and relax at another level.
10:02 to 10:20.
There are also realities that are relatively more valid than your own. In comparison, strictly for an analogy, for example, your physical table would appear as shadowy in contrast, as like those very shadowy tables we imagine. You would have a sort of super table in those terms. Yours is not a system of reality formed by the most intense concentration of energy, therefore. It is simply the one you are tuned into, part and parcel of. You perceive it simply for this reason. Other portions of yourself, therefore, of which you are not consciously aware, do inhabit what you could call a supersystem of reality, in which consciousness learns to handle and perceive much stronger concentrations of energy, and to construct forms of a different nature indeed. Your idea of space is then highly distorted, since space to you is simply where nothing is perceived. It is obviously filled with all kinds of phenomena that make no impression at all upon your perceptive mechanisms. Now, in various ways and on occasion, you can tune into these other realities to some degree, and you do so spasmodically, though in many cases the experience is lost because it does not register physically.
Pause at 10:30.
Think again about this form that you sent to the Oceanside. Though it was not equipped with your own physical senses, it was of itself to some extent able to perceive. You projected it unknowingly, but through quite natural laws. The form built up from intense emotional desire. The image then follows its own laws of reality, and to some extent, and to a lesser degree than you, has a consciousness. Now, you are, using an analogy again, sent out by a superself who strongly desired existence in physical form. You are no puppet of this superself. You will follow your own lines of development, and through means far too difficult to explain here, you add to the experience of the superself and also then extend the nature of its reality. You also ensure your own development, and you are able to draw upon the abilities of the superself. Nor will you ever be swallowed by the self that in these terms seems so superior. Because you exist, you send out like projections of your own, as mentioned earlier. There is no end to the reality of consciousness, nor the means of its materialization. Nor is there any end to the developments possible for each identity. Now, I wanted to begin this chapter this evening so that we would have a good start. I will give you an easy, short session, however.
I'm okay.
You yawned frequently.
Oh, that hardly matters. I feel pretty good right now.
Take a very brief break, then, and we shall continue.
10:43. Jane's trance had been good. The regular rhythm of the session had continued. Resume at a slower rate at 10:54.
Now, let me make it clear once again. Your present personality, as you think of it, is indeed indelible, and continues after death to grow and develop. I mention this again in the middle of our present discussion so that you do not feel lost or negated or insignificant. There are obviously an infinite number of gradations in the types and kinds of forms of which we have been speaking. That energy which is projected from our superself, that spark of intense identity that resulted in your physical birth, that unique impetus in the one way has many similarities to the old concept of the soul, except that it contains only a part of the story.
Long pause at 11:01. Jane was now pausing very noticeably between many phrases as she delivered this material.
While you continue to exist and develop as an individual, your whole self, or soul, has such vast potential that it can never be expressed fully through one personality, as somewhat explained in one previous chapter. Now, through very intense emotional focus, you can create a form and project it to another person who may then perceive it. This may be done consciously or unconsciously, and that is rather important. This discussion does not concern the so-called astral form, which is something entirely different. The physical body is the materialization of the astral form.
11:05.
It does not desert the body for any length of time, however, and it is not this that is projected in cases like the seaside analogy used earlier. You are presently focused not only in your physical body, but within a particular frequency of events that you interpret as time. Other historical periods exist simultaneously, in forms quite as valid, and other reincarnational selves. Again, you simply are not tuned to those frequencies. You can know what happened in the past and have histories, because according to the rules of the game that you accepted, you believe that the past, but not the future, can be perceived. You could have histories of the future in the present if the rules of the game were different. Do you follow me?
Yes. Long pause at 11:11.
In other levels of reality, the rules of the game change. After death, in your terms, you are quite free perceptively. The future appears as clearly as the past. Even this is highly complicated, however, for there is not just one past. You accept as real only certain classifications of events and ignore others. We have mentioned events. There are also probable pasts, therefore, that exist quite outside your comprehension. You choose one particular group of these and latch upon this group of events as the only ones possible, not realizing that you have selected from an infinite variety of past events. There are then, obviously, probable futures and probable presence. I am trying to discuss this in your terms, since basically you must understand the words past, present, and future are no more meaningful as far as true experience is concerned than are the words ego, conscious, or unconscious. I will end dictation for this evening. In this probable evening, I select that probable alternative. My fondest wishes to you both.
11:20. Following this, Seth gave two very interesting pages of material concerning a psychic investigator writer and his wife. They had witnessed the deleted 529th session for last Monday, May 18th. Tonight's session actually ended then at 11:35 p.m. Session 531, May 25th, 1970, 9:22 p.m., Monday.
Good evening.
Good evening, Seth.
Now, we will resume our dictation. Not only are you part of other independent selves, each one focused in its own reality, but there is a sympathetic relationship that exists. For example, because of this relationship, your experience need not be limited by the physical perceptive mechanisms. You can draw upon knowledge that belongs to these other independent selves. You can learn to focus your attention away from physical reality to learn new methods of perception that will enable you to enlarge your concept of reality and greatly expand your own experience.
9:28. Jane's delivery gradually began to speed up.
It is only because you believe that physical existence is the only valid one that it does not occur to you to look for other realities. Such things as telepathy and clairvoyance can give you hints of other kinds of perception, but you are also involved in quite definite experiences both while you are normally waking and while you are asleep. The so-called stream of consciousness is simply that, one small stream of thoughts, images, and impressions that is part of a much deeper river of consciousness that represents your own far greater existence and experience. You spend all your time examining this one small stream so that you become hypnotized by its flow and entranced by its motion. Simultaneously, these other streams of perception and consciousness go by without your notice, yet they are very much a part of you, and they represent quite valid aspects, events, actions, emotions with which you are also involved in other layers of reality.
9:35.
You are as actively and vividly concerned in these realities as you are in the one in which your main attention is now focused. Now, as you are merely concerned with your physical body and physical self as a rule, you give your attention to the stream of consciousness that seems to deal with it. These other streams of consciousness, however, are connected with other self forms that you do not perceive. The body, in other words, is simply one manifestation of what you are in one reality, but in these other realities, you have other forms. You are not divorced from these other streams of consciousness in any basic way. Only your focus of attention closes you off from them and from the events in which they are involved. If you think of your stream of consciousness as transparent, however, then you can learn to look through and beneath it to others that lie in other beds of reality. You can also learn to rise above your present stream of consciousness and perceive others that run, for analogy's sake, parallel. The point is that you are only limited to the self you know if you think that you are, and if you do not realize that that self is far from your entire identity. Now often you tune into these other streams of consciousness without realizing that you have done so. For again, they are a part of the same river of your identity. All are therefore connected. Any creative work involves you in a cooperative process in which you learn to dip into these other streams of consciousness and come up with a perception that has far more dimensions than one arising from the one narrow, usual stream of consciousness that you know. Great creativity is then multidimensional for this reason. Its origin is not from one reality, but from many, and it is tinged with the multiplicity of that origin.
949.
Great creativity always seems greater than its pure physical dimension and reality. By contrast with the so-called usual, it appears almost as an intrusion. It takes the breath away. Such creativity automatically reminds each man of his own multidimensional reality. The words, "Know thyself," therefore, mean far more than most people ever suppose. Now, in moments of solitude, you may become aware of some of these other streams of consciousness. You may at times, for example, hear words or see images that appear out of context with your own thoughts. According to your education, beliefs, and background, you may interpret these in any number of ways. For that matter, they may originate from several sources. On many occasions, however, you have inadvertently tuned in on one of your other streams of consciousness, opened momentarily a channel to those other levels of reality in which other portions of you dwell. Some of these may involve the thoughts of what you would call a reincarnational self, focused in another period of history as you know it. You may instead pick up an event in which a probable self is involved, according to your inclination, your psychic suppleness, your curiosity, your desire for knowledge. In other words, you may become aware of a far greater reality than you now know. Use abilities that you do not realize you possess. Know beyond all doubt that your own consciousness and identity is independent of the world in which you now focus your primary attention. If all of that were not true, I would not be writing this book and you would not be reading it. Now you may take your break.
Thank you. 10:01 to 10:10.
Now, these other existences of yours go on quite merrily whether you are waking or sleeping, but while you are awake, ordinarily you block them out. In the dream state, you are much more aware of them, although there is a final process of dreaming that often masks intense psychological and psychic experience, and unfortunately what you usually recall is this final dream version. In this final version, the basic experience is converted as nearly as possible into physical terms. It is therefore distorted. This final touching-up process is not done by deeper layers of the self, however, but is much more nearly a conscious process than you realize. One small point might explain what I mean here. If you do not want to remember a particular dream, you yourself censor the memory on levels quite close to consciousness. Often, you can even catch yourself in the act of purposely dropping the memory of a dream. The touching up process occurs almost at this same level, though not quite. Here, the basic experience is hastily dressed up as much as possible in physical clothes. This is not because you want to understand the experience, but because you refuse to accept it as basically non-physical. All dreams are not of this nature. Some dreams themselves do take place in psychic or mental areas connected with your daily activities, in which case no dressing up process is necessary. But in the very deep reaches of sleep experience, those incidentally not yet touched upon by scientists in so-called dream laboratories, you are in communication with other portions of your own identity and with the other realities in which they exist.
10:20.
In this state, you also pursue works and endeavors that may or may not be connected with your interests as you know of them. You are learning, studying, playing. You are anything but asleep, as you think of the term. You are highly active. You are involved in the underground work and the real nitty-gritty of existence. Now let me emphasize here that you are simply not unconscious. It only seems that you are, because as a rule you remember none of this in the morning. To some extent, however, some people are aware of these activities, and there are also methods that will enable you to recall them to some degree. I do not want to minimize the importance of your state of consciousness. As, for example, you read this book. Presumably, you are awake. But in many ways, when you are awake, you are resting far more than you are in your so-called unconscious nightly state. Then, to a larger extent, you realize your own reality and are free to use abilities that in the daytime you ignore or deny.
1026.
At a very simple level, for example, your consciousness leaves your body often in the sleep state. You communicate with people in other levels of reality that you have known, but far beyond this, you creatively maintain and revitalize your physical image. You process daily experience, project it into what you think of as the future, choose from an infinity of probable events those you will make physical, and begin the mental and psychic processes that will bring them into the world of substance. At the same time, you make this information available to all these other portions of your identity who dwell in entirely different realities, and you receive from them comparable information. You do not lose contact with your ordinary waking self. You simply do not focus upon it. You turn your attention away. In the daytime, you simply reverse the process. If you were looking at your daily normal self from the other viewpoint you see, using an analogy here, you might find that physically waking self as strange as you now find the sleeping self. The analogy will not hold, however, simply because this sleeping self of yours is far more knowledgeable than the waking self of which you are so proud.
1035.
The seeming division is not arbitrary or forced upon you. It is simply caused by your present stage of development, and it does vary. Many people take excursions into other realities. Swim, so to speak, through other streams of consciousness as a part of their normal waking lives. Sometimes strange fish pop up in those waters. Now, I am obviously such a one in your terms, swimming up through other dimensions of reality and observing a dimension of existence that is yours rather than my own. There are, therefore, channels that exist between all these streams of consciousness, all these symbolic rivers of psychological and psychic experience, and there are journeys that can be made from my dimension as well as yours. Now, initially, Rupert and Joseph and I were a part of the same entity, or overall identity, and so symbolically speaking, there are psychic currents that unite us. All of these merge into what has often been compared to as an ocean of consciousness, a well from which all actuality springs. Start with any one consciousness, and theoretically you will find all others.
Pause at 1043.
Now, often as the ego acts as a dam to hold back other perceptions, not because it was meant to, or because it is in the nature of an ego to behave in such a fashion, or even because it is a main function of an ego, but simply because you have been taught that the purpose of an ego is restrictive rather than expanding. You actually imagine that the ego is a very weak portion of the self, that it must defend itself against other areas of the self that are far stronger and more persuasive and indeed more dangerous. And so you have trained it to wear blinders and quite against its natural inclinations. The ego does want to understand and interpret physical reality and to relate to it. It wants to help you survive within physical existence, but by putting blinders upon it, you hamper its perception and native flexibility. Then, because it is inflexible, you say that this is the natural function and characteristic of the ego. It cannot relate to a reality that you will not allow it to perceive. It can poorly help you to survive when you do not allow it to use its abilities to discover those true conditions in which it must manipulate. You put blinders on it, and then say it cannot see. You may take your break.
10:49. Jane had been well dissociated. I've really been out tonight, I can tell you that. Her pace had been good, with short pauses occasionally. Resume at 11:02.
That was the end of dictation. Now, give us a moment.
Following his pattern of late, Seth wound up the session with a couple of pages of other material. This time, the data concerned the reasons behind Jane's years of training in writing poetry and fiction. It was very astute, I thought. Seth explained how Jane's poetry had always been a creative offshoot of her desire to understand the nature of existence and reality, her way of probing psychically into other realms, a method of investigation and a method of exploring the results. Her fiction, Seth added, was Jane's way of probing probabilities and of trying to understand other people. All of her writing is a part of her creative life, but now she is investigating the nature of reality far more directly. There's a great unity in the personality's main interests. Nothing will be left behind. The creative self is operating, you see, going exactly where it wants to go. Jane's psychic experiences, Seth said, would themselves initiate other creative endeavors, leading her to delve into deeper, literally unending, universal pools of creativity. End at 11:21 p.m. Seth Speaks by Jane Roberts. Copyrighted material. All rights reserved.
Chapter 8. Sleep, Dreams, and Consciousness.
Session 532, May 27, 1970, 9:24 p.m., Wednesday.
Good evening.
Good evening, Seth.
Persons vary in the amount of sleep they need, and no pill will ever allow them to dispense with sleep entirely, for too much work is done in that state. However, this could be done far more effectively with two rather than one sleep periods of lesser duration. Two periods of 3 hours apiece would be quite sufficient for most people if the proper suggestions were given before sleep, suggestions that would ensure the body's complete recuperation. In many cases, 10 hours sleep, for example, is actually disadvantageous, resulting in a sluggishness both of mind and body. In this case, the spirit has simply been away from the body for too long a time, resulting in a loss of muscular flexibility.
Jane's delivery was quite fast, and remained so throughout the session.
As many light snacks would actually be much better than three large meals a day, so short naps rather than such an extended period would also be more effective. There would be other benefits. The conscious self would recall more of its dream adventures as a matter of course, and gradually these would be added to the totality of experience as the ego thinks of it. As the result of more frequent, briefer sleep periods, there would also be higher peaks of conscious focus and a more steady renewal of both physical and psychic activity. There would not be such a definite division between the various areas or levels of the self. A more economical use of energy would result, and also a more effective use of nutrients. Consciousness, as you know it, would also become more flexible and mobile. This would not lead to a blurring of consciousness or focus. Instead, the greater flexibility would result in a perfection of conscious focus. The seeming great division between the waking and the sleeping self is largely a result of the division in function, the two being largely separated. A block of time being allotted to the one and a larger block of time to the other. They are kept apart, then, because of your use of time.
9:36.
Initially, your conscious life followed the light of day. Now, with artificial light, this need not be the case. There are opportunities here, then, to be gained from your technology that you are not presently taking advantage of. To sleep all day and work all night is hardly the answer. It is simply the inversion of your present habits. But it would be far more effective and efficient to divide the 24-hour period in a different way. There are many variations, in fact, that would be better than your present system. Ideally, sleeping 5 hours at a time, you gain the maximum benefit, and anything else over this time is not nearly as helpful. Those who require more sleep would then take, say, a 2-hour nap. For others, a 4-hour block sleep session and 2 naps would be highly beneficial. With suggestion properly given, the body can recuperate in half the time now given to sleep. In any case, it is much more bracing and efficient to have the physical body active rather than inactive for, say, 8 to 10 hours. You have trained your consciousness to follow certain patterns that are not necessarily natural for it, and these patterns increase the sense of alienation between the waking and dreaming self. To some extent, you drug the body with suggestion, so that it believes it must sleep away a certain amount of hours in one block. Animals sleep when they are tired and awaken in a much more natural fashion. You would retain a far greater memory of your subjective experiences, and your body would be healthier if these sleeping patterns were changed. 6 to 8 hours of sleep in all would be sufficient with the nap patterns outlined. And even those who think they now need more sleep than this would find that they did not, if all the time was not spent in one block. The entire system, physical, mental, and psychic, would benefit. The divisions between the self would not be nearly as severe. Physical and mental work would be easier, and the body itself would gain steady periods of refreshment and rest. Now, as a rule, it must wait, regardless of its condition, at least for some 16 hours. For other reasons having to do with the chemical reactions during the dream state, bodily health would be improved, and this particular schedule would also be of help in schizophrenia, and generally aid persons with problems of depression or those with mental instability.
952.
Your sense of time would also be less rigorous and rigid. Creative abilities would be quickened, and the great problem of insomnia that exists for many people would be largely conquered, for what they fear is often the long period of time in which consciousness, as they think of it, seems to be extinguished. Small meals or snacks would then be taken upon rising. This method of eating and sleeping would greatly help various metabolic difficulties and also aid in the development of spiritual and psychic ability. For many reasons, physical activity at night has a different effect upon the body than physical activity during the day, and ideally, both effects are necessary. At certain times during the night, the negative ions in the air are much stronger or numerous than in the daytime, for example. And activity during this time, particularly a walk or outside activity, would be highly beneficial from a health standpoint. Now, the period just before dawn often represents a crisis point for persons severely ill. Consciousness has been away from the body for too long a period, and such a returning consciousness then has difficulty dealing with the sick body mechanism. The practice in hospitals of giving drugs to patients so that they will sleep entirely throughout the night is detrimental for this reason. In many cases, it is too great a strain on the part of the returning consciousness to take over again the ailing mechanism. Such medications also often prevent certain necessary dream cycles that can help the body recuperate, and the consciousness then becomes highly disoriented. Some of the divisions between different portions of the self, therefore, are not basically necessary, but are the result of custom and convenience. In earlier periods of time, even though there were no electric lights, for example, sleep was not long and continuous at night, for sleeping quarters were not as secure. The caveman, for example, while sleeping, was on the alert for predators. The mysterious aspects of the natural night in outside surroundings kept him partially alert. He awakened often and surveyed the nearby land and his own place of shelter.
10:04.
He did not sleep in long blocks, as you do. His sleeping periods were instead for 2 or 3 hours, stretched through the nighttime from dusk to dawn, but alternated by periods of high wakefulness and alert activity. He also crept out to seek food when he hoped his predators were sleeping. This resulted in a mobility of consciousness that indeed ensured his physical survival, and those intuitions that appeared to him in the dream state were remembered and taken advantage of in the waking state. Now, many diseases are simply caused by this division of yours and this long period of bodily inactivity and this extended focus of attention in either waking or dreaming reality. Your normal consciousness can benefit by excursions and rest in those other fields of actuality that are entered when you sleep, and the so-called sleeping consciousness will also benefit by frequent excursions into the waking state. Now you may take your break.
10:10. Jane's trance had been deep, her pace fast throughout. Yet she remembered some of the material, which usually isn't the case. She hadn't been reading about sleep recently. "The whole bit is far out to me," she said. "I haven't been entertaining any ideas like these, at least consciously." Resume in the same manner at 10:22.
Now, I bring up these matters here because such changes in habitual patterns would definitely result in greater understanding of the nature of the self. The inner dreaming portions of the personality seem strange to you not only because of a basic difference of focus, but because you clearly devote opposite portions of a 24-hour cycle to these areas of the self. You separate them as much as possible. In doing so, you divide your intuitive, creative, and psychic abilities quite neatly from your physical, manipulative, objective abilities. It makes no difference how many hours of sleep you think you need. You would be much better off sleeping in several shorter periods, and you would actually then require less time. The largest sleep unit should be at night. But again, the efficiency of sleep is lessened and disadvantages set in after 6 to 8 hours of physical inactivity. The functions of hormones and chemicals, and of adrenal processes in particular, would function with far greater effectiveness with these alternating periods of activities, as I have mentioned. The wear and tear upon the body would be minimized, while at the same time all regenerative powers would be used to the maximum. Both those with a high and low metabolism would benefit. The psychic centers would be activated more frequently, and the entire identity of the personality would be better strengthened and maintained. The resulting mobility and flexibility of consciousness would cause an added dividend in increased conscious concentration, and fatigue levels would always remain below danger points. A greater equalization, both physical and mental, would result. Now, such schedules could be adopted quite easily. Those who work the American working hours, for example, could sleep between 4 to 6 hours an evening, according to individual variations, and nap after supper. I want to make it plain, however, that anything over a 6 to 8 hour continuous sleeping period works against you, and a 10-hour period, for example, can be quite disadvantageous. On awakening often, then, you do not feel rested, but drained of energy. You have not been minding the store. If you do not understand that in periods of sleep, your consciousness actually does leave your body, then what I have said will be meaningless. Now, your consciousness does return at times to check upon the physical mechanisms, and the simple consciousness of atom and cell, the body consciousness, is always with the body, so it is not vacant. But the largely creative portions of the self do leave the body, and for large periods of time when you sleep.
1039.
Some cases of strong neurotic behavior result from your present sleeping habits. Sleepwalking to some degree is also connected here. Consciousness wants to return to the body, but it has been hypnotized into the idea that the body must not awaken. Excess nervous energy takes over and rouses the muscles to activity, because the body knows it has been inactive for too long and otherwise severe muscle cramps would result. The same applies to your eating habits. By turn, you overstuff and then starve the tissues. This has definite effects upon the nature of your consciousness, your creativity, your degree of concentration. Along these lines, for example, you do literally starve your bodies at night and add to the aging of your bodies by denying them food throughout those long hours. All of this reflects upon the strength and nature of your consciousness. Your food should be divided within the 24-hour period and not just during the times of wakefulness. That is, if the sleep patterns were changed as I suggest, you would also be eating during some night hours. You would eat far less at any given meal time, however. Small amounts of food, much more frequently taken, would be much more beneficial than your present practice in physical, mental, and psychic terms. Changing the sleep patterns would automatically change the eating patterns. You would find you were a much more united identity. You would become aware of your clairvoyant and telepathic abilities, for example, to a far greater degree, and you would not feel the deep separation that you now feel between the dreaming and waking self. To a large degree, this sense of alienation would vanish. Your enjoyment of nature would also increase, for as a rule, you are largely unacquainted with the nighttime. You could take much better advantage of the intuitional knowledge that occurs in the dream state, and the cycle of your moods would not swing so definitely as it often does. You would feel much safer and more secure in all areas of existence. The problems of senility would also be reduced, for stimuli would not be minimized for so long a time, and consciousness, with a greater flexibility, would know more of its own sense of joy. You may take a break. And if you do not try this, how can you expect others to?
I don't know.
Your own periods of creative work would also be more effective and efficient if you followed the advice given here.
Well, we'll see what we can do. 10:53 p.m. Jane's trance had again been deep. Her pace rapid. Indeed, her speed left my writing hand almost numb. This break proved to be the end of the recording session. Now, for the second time recently, Seth and I enjoyed a chat without my taking notes. He explained in more detail how an altered sleep pattern would considerably improve my painting. After it was over, I wished I had recorded the conversation, since it contained much information that could be applied generally. Jane ended the evening by saying that she wasn't even in a session mood tonight. Since this session, it is June 1st as I type this, Jane and I have been experimenting somewhat with altered sleep patterns, and we can say that Seth's ideas seem eminently workable. After a shorter nighttime sleep period, we have no difficulty waking up easily, alert, and ready to go. We supplement this pattern with one or two rest periods during the daylight hours. The system adds an unaccustomed sharpness of appreciation to all of our activities. Session 533, June 1st, 1970, 9:20 p.m., Monday. Previous to the material given below, Seth delivered 5 pages of personal data for Jane and me. He resumed dictation on Chapter 8 of his own book after a break at 10:10.
Dictation,
All right.
Now, it is well known that fluctuations of consciousness and alertness exist in the sleep state. Some periods of dream activity do indeed supersede those of some waking states. But there are also fluctuations in normal waking consciousness, rhythms of intense activity followed by a much less active period of consciousness. Some waking states, of course, come very close to sleep states. These blend one into the other so that the rhythm often goes unnoticed. These gradations of consciousness are accompanied by changes in the physical organism. In the more sluggish periods of waking consciousness, there is a lack of concentration, a cutting off of stimuli to varying degrees, an increase in accidents, and generally a lower body tone.
10:28.
Because of your habits of an extended sleep period, followed by an extended waking period, you do not take advantage of these rhythms of consciousness. The high peaks are to some extent smothered or even go unnoticed. The sharp contrasts and the high efficiency of the natural waking consciousness is barely utilized. Now, I am giving all of this material here because it will help you understand and use your present abilities. You are asking too much of normal waking consciousness, smoothing out the valleys and peaks of its activity, demanding in some cases that it go full blast ahead when it is actually at a minimal period, denying yourself the great mobility of consciousness that is possible.
10:33.
The suggestions given earlier in this chapter concerning sleeping habits will result in a natural use of these rhythms. The peaks will be experienced more frequently. Concentration will be increased, problems seen more clearly, and learning capacities better utilized.
Earlier in the day, I had remarked to Jane that it seemed the adverb far was showing up in the material quite often. Now, Seth Jane leaned forward, smiling with mock emphasis.
I was going to say far better utilized.
Yes.
Now, this extended period given to waking consciousness without rest periods builds up chemicals in the blood that are discharged in sleep. But in the meantime, they make the body sluggish and retard conscious concentration. The long sleep period to which you are accustomed then does become necessary. A vicious circle then is formed. This forces overstimulations during the night, increasing the body's work, making it perform continuously over an extended time physical purifications that ideally would be taken care of in briefer periods of rest. The ego feels threatened by the extended leave of absence it must take, becomes wary of sleep, and sets up barriers against the dream state. Many of these are highly artificial.
10:42.
A seeming duality is the result, and a mistrust on one part of the self toward the other. Much creative material of quite practical value is lost in the process. The procedures mentioned would allow much greater access to such information, and the waking self would be more refreshed. The symbolism in dreams would appear with greater clarity, not, for example, be lost through the many hours you now give to sleep. Muscular strength would benefit. The blood would be cleansed more effectively than when the body lies prone for such a time. Most of all, there would be far, if you will excuse me, better communication between the subjective layers of the self, an increased sense of security, and particularly with children, an earlier kindling of creative abilities. Now you may take a break or end the session as you prefer.
We'll take the break. 10:50 to 11:04.
A clear, uncluttered, bright, and powerful consciousness needs frequent rest periods if its efficiency is to be maintained and if it is to correctly interpret reality. Otherwise, it distorts what is perceived. Rest or sleep cures, very extended sleep periods, have been helpful for therapy in some cases, not because extended sleep is in itself beneficial, but because so many toxins had built up that such extended periods were required. Learning processes are definitely hampered through your present habits, for there are certain periods when consciousness is attuned to learning, and yet you try to force learning during unrecognized minimal periods. Creative and psychic abilities are thrust into the background simply because of this artificial division. Dualities result that affect all of your activities. In some cases, you literally force yourself to sleep when your consciousness could be at one of its maximum points. This is, incidentally, at the pre-dawn period. In certain afternoon hours, consciousness is lowered and needs refreshment that is instead denied. If the stages of waking consciousness were examined as sleep stages are presently being examined, for example, you would find a much greater range of activity than is suspected. Certain transition stages are completely ignored. In many ways, it can be said that consciousness does indeed flicker and varies in intensities. It is not like a steady beam of light, for instance. Now I will end our dictation. My heartiest regards to you both.
The same to you, Seth. Thank you. 11:15 p.m., Jane, out of trance, was surprised by the quick ending of the session. Session 534, June 8, 1970, 9:05 p.m., Monday. No session was held last Wednesday, June 3rd. At 8:30 tonight, Jane and I discussed Seth's progress on his book. Jane was somewhat concerned. She wasn't reading the book now, but she realized Seth wasn't following literally the outline he'd given for it before he began dictating it chapter by chapter. I told her I thought Seth was presenting it just as he wanted it done. She agreed that she might as well relax and just let it come out. I would now like to describe two effects, one of Jane's and one of mine, that took place almost simultaneously some few minutes before the session began. In addition, my experience blended into another one after the session started, but more about that later. 1. As we sat waiting for the session to begin, Jane told me that the face of Joseph, in my oil painting of Rupert and Joseph, smiled down at her from its spot on the living room wall. When Jane became aware of the smiling effect, she looked away from the painting, then quickly back at it. The effect was still there, she said. It lasted for perhaps 2 minutes, until just before session time at 9. Jane faced the painting as she sat in her Kennedy rocker, but my back was to it, because of my position on the couch. During the several times I turned to look at it, I noticed nothing out of the ordinary. Jane told me that Joseph, representing my own entity, smiled broadly at her in a way that the painting actually doesn't. The expression in the eyes changed first, the smile spreading from them down to the mouth. The forehead didn't move. It was as though the painting became abruptly alive, although the painted head of Rupert did not change. Jane doesn't particularly like the painting, and has never seen this change in it before. 2. My effect concerns an interference in my vision without an actual loss of sight. It produced no after effects this evening, nor had it ever in earlier years beyond a very slight headache. Tonight, I didn't get the headache. Strangely, I've never been alarmed by this phenomenon. With my somewhat secretive nature, I'd had no urge, even as a child, to tell my parents about it or to see a doctor. The absence of after effects and the continued clarity of my mental processes may have been reassuring. The effect, which always reminded me of a mirage, began with a smallish, bright sawtooth pattern of light just to the right of my direct line of vision. Now, with memory of almost forgotten episodes returning, I knew that this brilliant, shimmering pattern could spread, so that as I looked at an object, it would be obliterated, even while I still had peripheral vision. At times, the interference had covered a wide enough area so that I had a difficult time seeing the drawing paper before me, for instance, or the pencil I felt in my hand. The shimmering varied in intensity. On one occasion, I lay down and closed my eyes simply because it was easier to do this than anything else. Such effects lasted half an hour at the most, usually less. Now, I wondered once again at my calm response to this as I grew up, to something whose origins were so completely outside any kind of knowledge I possessed. When the interference had been strong, covering most of the field of vision, I had experienced a peculiar sense of both darkness and light, with the objective world indistinguishable within what I can only describe as a field of patterned, alternating lightness and darkness that possessed a velvety depth. Tonight's experience wasn't that intense. I first realized its onset at about 8:50, and at once began to give myself suggestions to minimize it, because I didn't want to alarm Jane by delaying the session. At the same time, Jane began to describe the smile she perceived in the painting. I could see the painting well enough when she asked me to check it, although my vision effect was still building. My suggestions were very beneficial, though, and by session time at 9:05, I realized that not only had my experience gone as far as it was going to go, but also that it was on the retreat. By 9:15, the last traces of it were gone, and my vision was clear. There is more to follow, for as this experience waned, it was replaced or led into an event of a different kind. This one was new to me, and most interesting. Subsequent notes, and Seth himself, explain what transpired as the session progressed. I'll say here that the new effect involved the gradual loss of my ability first to spell and then to write. Jane began to speak for Seth at quite a slow pace, in contrast to her faster rate of recent sessions. As the session began, I had to make a little bit of an effort to see the page clearly in order to write.
Good evening.
Good evening, Seth. Just before the session, I had commented on the peaceful evening, which was very warm.
I hope I do not shatter your peace.
No.
We will resume dictation.
Pause, one of many.
Consciousness has many characteristics, some of course known to you. Many of the characteristics of consciousness, however, are not so apparent, since presently you largely use your own consciousness in such a way that its perceptions appear in quite other than natural guises. You are aware of your own consciousness, in other words, through the medium of your own physical mechanism. You are not nearly as aware of your own consciousness when it is not operating primarily through the mediumship of the body, as it does in out-of-body states and some dissociated conditions.
By the time I wrote the last sentence, I was aware, again, without being upset, that it was taking me just a little longer than usual to come up with my abbreviations or symbols for such common words as does, as, and even. This action, of course, should have been automatic, but visual interference was now lifting considerably. By 9:12, I began to spell an occasional word incorrectly, such as same, S-E-M-E, death, D-E-T-H, or basically, B-A-S-C-I-A-L-L-Y.
The characteristics of consciousness are the same whether you are in a body or outside of one. The peaks and valleys of consciousness that I mentioned exist to some degree in all consciousness despite the form adopted after death. The nature of your consciousness is no different, basically, than it is now, though you may not be aware of many of its characteristics.
I caught myself omitting the word not from the last sentence, and was quite aware by now that something was up. More and more, I had to make a deliberate effort to get the notes down correctly. In the material below, I couldn't think of some of the symbols I used and had to write the words out.
Now, your consciousness is telepathic and clairvoyant, for example, even though you may not realize it. In sleep, when you often presume yourself to be unconscious, you may be far more conscious than you are now, but simply using abilities of consciousness that you do not accept as real or valid in waking life. You therefore shut them out of your conscious experience. Consciousness, yours and mine, is quite independent of both time and space. And after death, you are simply aware of the greater powers of consciousness that exist within you all the time.
9:21. I had a lot of trouble getting the following sentences down. Many of the words were misspelled. Some so much so that I crossed them out and quickly tried again, with the humorous result that the corrections also contained errors. My vision was by now very clear. For the first time, I conceded to myself that perhaps I ought to ask Seth to slow down, while realizing his pace was slow to begin with. I didn't ask him what was happening. That worthy stared at me through Jane's eyes without a sign that anything unusual might be taking place in the session.
Since they do, of course, you can discover them now and learn to use them. This will directly assist you in after-death experience. You will not be nearly so startled by the nature of your own reactions if you understand beforehand, for example, that your consciousness not only is not imprisoned by your physical body, but can create other portions at will. Those who over-identify their consciousness with their body can suffer self-created torment for no reason, lingering about the body. Indeed, quite the forlorn soul, thinking it has no other place to go.
For beforehand, in the paragraph above, I wrote, "By Borhun," then crossed that out and tried twice more. I now made a determined effort to spell correctly and write clearly. It helped. It was something like coming out of a deep sleep and immediately making a strong effort to focus in physical reality.
You are, as I said earlier, a spirit now, and that spirit has a consciousness. The consciousness belongs to the spirit then, but the two are not the same. The spirit may turn its consciousness off and on. By its nature, consciousness may flicker and fluctuate, but the spirit does not. I do not particularly like the word spirit because of several implications attached to it, but it suits our purposes in that the word does imply an independence from physical form. Consciousness does not refresh itself in sleep. It is merely turned in another direction. Consciousness does not sleep then in those terms, and while it may be turned off, it is not like a light.
9:28. The difficulty I had been experiencing with my spelling abruptly returned to an even greater degree. Along with the misspellings and the crossing out of words, I now had to worry about simply keeping up with Seth's rather slow pace. For the first time, I thought of asking for a break, yet I still wasn't alarmed. I had trouble with the whole paragraph.
Turning it off does not extinguish it in the way that a light disappears when a switch is turned. Following the analogy, if consciousness were like a light that belonged to you, even when you switched it off, there would be a sort of twilight, but not darkness.
By now, I was sitting tensely on the edge of our couch, bending over the notebook as it lay on the coffee table before me. This is a position I seldom use. Perhaps I thought it would help me really grapple with this experience. I asked Seth to wait a minute.
The spirit, therefore, is never in a state of nothingness with its consciousness extinguished. It is very important, therefore, that such be realized, for their...
The rest of the sentence is unintelligible in my notes. Here is the way I actually wrote it. The spirit, tre, is never n, a state of nethingness, with its consciousness extendly. It is very important, tre, thanch, be realized, further, if expect as the stitches is. In considerable surprise, I asked Seth to wait once more. I missed a couple of sentences here, and very nearly gave up trying to take notes. I thought of one more try, however. Jane, as Seth, sat waiting rather noncommittally, eyes open.
It is very important to understand that consciousness is never extinguished.
9:35. Again, I quickly fell way behind. When I found myself writing istantala, for extinguished, I gave up and asked Seth for a break. It came at once. I was nonplussed. I was clear-headed, but unable literally to continue taking notes. Still, I wasn't alarmed. When I started to explain to Jane why I had to stop, I discovered that on top of everything else, I was having trouble speaking coherently. Seth then returned briefly with a broad smile. From memory, I recall his saying,
"You have been acting out the material this evening, Joseph."
With those words, understanding came quickly, although the effects didn't lift that easily. I made many errors talking to Jane, but the vocal difficulty never matched that of the spelling or writing. At first, Jane was very concerned at my experiences before and during the session. She told me later that at this point, she almost decided not to continue the session. She finally believed my reassurances, however, and realized that I was all right physically. Seth suspended dictation on his book at my request, but during a brief interlude suggested that I have Jane turn on the rest of the lights in the room when she came out of trance. Then I was to imagine my consciousness growing brighter and brighter, filling the room like light. I would find that all of my abilities would soon return. I wasn't able to remember some subsequent information. Thus, I had experienced altered states of seeing, writing, spelling, and speaking this evening, all facets, of course, of my physical means of communication. Sitting in the glare of the brilliantly lit room, I described everything in detail to Jane, including the vision effects of earlier years. She wondered if my loss of communicative abilities was also related to my father's senility and his own physical retreat. I didn't know. I hadn't experienced anything unusual involving him recently. Slowly, I resumed work on my notes. I was most anxious that Seth explain all. And he was right. By 10:30, I was much better. I caught up on the notes finally and told Jane I was ready for the session to continue. Now we received the most interesting data of all, that pertaining to my curious lack of alarm at the events of the evening. Resume at a faster pace. At 10:47.
Now, in the demonstration in which Joseph so kindly assisted us, several points were made to implement the material just given. Earlier I said that you are only familiar with those characteristics of your own consciousness that you use through the mediumship of the body. You rely upon the body to express the perceptions of your consciousness. You tend, again, to identify the expression of your consciousness with the body. In our demonstration, to which, of course, Joseph gave his permission, he allowed his consciousness to retreat and, to some degree, began to cut off its physical expression. He was not aware, consciously, of his permission, simply because this kind of demonstration could not be held if the normal waking consciousness knew. It would automatically be frightened. As I spoke about the dimming of consciousness, Joseph then experienced it.
10:55. This may be a tricky point, and it may not. Seth used the word dimming. Certainly some of my abilities for physical expression had withdrawn considerably, yet I had remained clear-headed and alert, and out of habit, thoroughly occupied with trying to use them. No